This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This episode of On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Brand Now, How to Stand Out in a Crowded, Distracted World. Many former On Brand guests are already raving about Brand Now. Jay Baer calls it the quintessential guide to modern branding. Stacey Grissom of BarkBox says Brand Now provides practical tools and a helpful framework for building a brand both online and off. Learn more, get special extras and additional resources at brandnowbook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Will Leach. Will is the founder of TriggerPoint, a leading behavioral research and design consultancy specializing in System 1 marketing. Simply put, TriggerPoint helps today's largest brands understand and change consumer and employee behavior through behavioral research and design. Will has over 20 years of behavioral insights experience and is a behavioral design instructor at the Cox School of Business, BLC, at Southern Methodist University. Will is the author of Marketing to Mind States, a practical field guide to applying behavioral design to marketing, and is also the only two-time winner of the Explore Award for Behavioral Science Research Innovation. Will, welcome to On Brand.
Hey, thanks for having me, Nick. I appreciate it.
So I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that you do something with behavioral research.
I think that's a great, safe limb for you to go out on. I've been doing it for about 20 years.
I know that I just read that phrase a lot, so I'm thinking that that's
branding.
Exactly. If you say it enough, you've just cracked the code of the podcast. Anyone listening doesn't have to listen to any more episodes. You've solved it right here today.
That's right.
That just say it enough, and we will we'll get there. Well, this is interesting because I think that there's all sorts of different research applications that can obviously power marketing, that can provide targeting resources, that can really ground your marketing. But talk about the behavioral side of that, because I'm not sure that that's a construct that we're always putting in front of our market research, and I'm guessing we probably should.
Yeah. So here's how I think about it, and it's really the whole idea of the book started a couple of years ago when I was at a conference called the Institute for the Future. And as you can imagine, you think you're going to go there and just get good wine and hopefully get a little boondoggle action out of it. And instead, and we talked about technology, and this was back in probably 2009, and this idea that all this advancements of technology was going to allow for us to be able to better target and reach our consumers in any format imaginable. So back then we were talking about watches, AI was just kind of starting to be talked about, but certainly we had social media and digital and everything else. And I sat in the background, I thought to myself, okay, great. So technology is going to enable us to get our message and our brand to any consumer in the world at any time we wanted to. But nobody was thinking about, well, what does that mean from a psychological perspective? Meaning, if now we're going to exponentially grow the amount of marketing that's possible to reach all these different people and all these different channels, then shouldn't our messaging be slightly different? And I, through another series of jobs, and I had a job at PepsiCo where I started learning a lot about behavioral design, this idea of saying, how do you create messaging that psychologically is advantaged because it's tapping into the non-conscious? Because what happens is, with all the technology out there, all the ability to reach consumers, but we're all saying kind of the same thing, whether we like it or not. A lot of marketing is basically the same, and you just exponentially magnified the amount of marketing that any one of your consumers would have access to. There's a filter that's set up, and the book talks about this filter that filters the vast majority of messages out there. And a lot of marketing agencies say, well, the best way to break through the filter is to be original and to be louder or funnier. And that stuff works, no doubt about it. The problem is, we all have the exact same idea. Let's get louder, funnier, more engaging, more emotional is what we'll talk about. But behavioral sciences has a totally different perspective on this. It says, no, you can actually go through this filter by using four non-conscious factors that I talk about in the book. So rather than being louder, be more prescriptive and precise, kind of like a scalpel, to go through this filter. And it makes for much better marketing.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head in a lot of ways, in a lot of the kind of common themes here. You talked about all these tools that we have to be understood more than ever. And at the same time, there's also data that shows that people understand brands less. So this disconnect that you talk about is very real. We filter out everything else. And I've never heard anybody say it exactly like that, but this thing that we have, that we all say, okay, so we have to cut through the clutter. And we've even seem to have found parity in that everybody's just trying to run the wackiest ad that can own the internet for a day.
Yep. No, that's exactly right. So that's our big tactic. Build brand preference by making our brand stick out. However, from behavioral psychology, I'm not saying that's necessarily wrong. The problem is, everyone's doing that. But from behavioral psychology, I want to do what's called saliency. I want to build saliency. And when you build saliency, where your brand just feels natural, it goes through that filter, you're building great brand preference without having to compete against what everyone else is doing. So my job in my consultancy and in the book is talking about how to create saliency so that your brand narrative and that story feels natural at a subconscious level. And that's a lot harder to do if you're not using principles in behavioral science.
So you talk about creating saliency, and that's I think I'm asking the question probably on many listeners' minds. What is that, and how do you do that?
Yep. So saliency, think of it as when you communicate something to anybody, it's fluid, easy to understand, and it doesn't require thought. So let me give you a stat. I teach this at SMU. Is that on the average day, you make about 35,000 decisions on any given day, like about 35,000. The vast majority of those decisions are made at the non-conscious level, because you're not purposely thinking through the pros and cons of every one of your decisions. Because if you did, you wouldn't even get out of bed. You couldn't possibly get through that many pros and cons lists. So the idea here is that the number one decision you make every day, Nick, is to not decide. You do it all the time. We all decide not to decide all the time. Saliency, because what happens is you're looking at something, you're going through a magazine, you see an ad, and your mind is telling you almost immediately whether I'm going to engage with that ad or not. Saliency makes it to where there's no pause in when I look at this ad, that non-consciously, psychologically, that ad just feels easy, and it's intuitive, and it feels natural. Because things that feel natural, I'm more likely to engage with it. So that's saliency. Now, how do you build saliency? Well, you know, a lot of people say, well, you build saliency by creating strong brands, strong equity. I don't doubt that in any stretch of imagination. That's true. However, there is science behind saliency that's been sitting out in academics for the last 30 or 40 years. And how do you create this naturalness when somebody's engaging with your brand, whether it's through packaging, website, consumer experience? It's all the same thing. And it comes down to four different social sciences. It's understanding and activating on somebody's goals, and that could be functional goals as well as higher order goals, or it's actually both. Understanding the motivation, so it's priming the core motivation that drives people to go after that goal. So for instance, a core motivation, there's about nine of them, one of them is security, right? To feel secure, safe, and protected from threat, or autonomy. A lot of HR groups are using autonomy to help with morale. And that's this idea of being unique and independent and being free in your actions, or esteem. This is really big on social media right now. Esteem is the desire to feel approval, respect, and admiration by others. So the idea is, if I understand your motivations, and that's the engine that drives you to go after your goals, those are two big key requirements to understanding how to build saliency. The third thing is something called regulatory fit. And you don't have to, the book is going to make it very easy for you guys to know all about these sciences, because I try to take all the jargon out of it and just kind of make things simple with some personal stories. But regulatory fit is that we go after our goals in one of two ways. One is using a promotion lens, meaning we're seeking to maximize gains. We're seeking to maximize our chances of successfully reaching that goal. So we're going to look for messages, brands, strategies that tell us, if you use me, if you interact with my brand, I will maximize your chances of reaching your goal, reader. You can have the same goal, the same motivation. Other people will look at that through a prevention lens, meaning they're going to seek to minimize risk. And they're going to look to messages, brands, strategies that are telling them, if you buy my brand, you are less likely to not reach your goals. And so there's a slight difference there, but it's magnified in copy and in visuals. And lastly, it's you want to trigger the behavior, which is using cognitive biases, or you'll know it. It's more in line with behavioral economics. So it's this idea that we have these shortcuts to decision making, because you don't want to do cost benefit of these 35,000 decisions. So what do? We all have these rules of thumb, these heuristics, they call them, that make decisions easier. So the classic one is scarcity effect, right? We value things that we believe are scarce in nature. We assign more value on those things. So rather than me doing cost benefit analysis, if you tell me limit four, that creates a sense of value, because if I'm only limited to four, it must be because a lot of people want this. So if I can activate the goal, prime the need, frame the choice, and then trigger the behavior, that creates saliency. And why you're doing that, it's the science behind behavioral design or emotional marketing. When you place somebody into this mind state where they have high emotional arousal, and that's what saliency does, it builds high emotional arousal, people are more susceptible to influence. So I always say, like when we talk about emotional marketing, I want people to understand there's science behind that. There is a way, prescriptive way, to create emotional marketing that's consistent, that you don't just get lucky because you hit that funny note, that one commercial, you try to replicate that 2 years later and it falls flat. It's because there wasn't really true science behind it. You got lucky. And so that's what marketing mindsets is all about, is trying to bring a methodical approach to building really strong emotional marketing. And we're using behavioral science to do that.
So the book is literally called Marketing to Mind States. What is your kind of go-to definition of a mind state? And obvious follow-up question, why is it important to market to them?
Yes. So a mind state are these moments that you have throughout your day. They're temporary in nature, where you have high emotional arousal. And it doesn't mean that your heart is fluttering and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. But you're in a hot state where you're in this moment of you're relying on these four factors that I just talked about, and which collectively is called system one decision making. It's all in the behavioral sciences space. But when you're in system one processing of information, you're using emotion. You're not really thinking through things. You're reacting. That's important because you're using system one a lot. So a mind state are these moments of your day, you're probably going through them a couple hundred times a day, where yes, you have this emotional arousal, and now messaging that is driven to tap into that mind state, is you're more receptive to it. The reason why that's important is, again, when you have high emotional arousal, you're more susceptible to influence because you're using your emotions. You're not thinking through the benefits of this brand, how much does it cost? It just feels natural. So it's important to understand these mind states, because a mind state, think of a mind state like this. It's not a segmentation. It's not even a personality test. I don't really believe in a lot of that stuff because they're not often predictive. What you can do, though, is we all have attitudes. You have likes, you have dislikes, you have attitudes, you have beliefs, you have preferences. And I, you know, if I talked to you for a while, Nick, you would tell me, and you're not going to lie to me about your preferences probably, but you may prefer to eat healthy, but yet on a Friday night, you're eating at Five Guys. It's not because your preference changed. It's not because all of a sudden I hate salads or whatever. No, right. You're in a mind state where you're like, I'm deserving. I've had a really rough freaking week. I want Five Guys. that moment of wanting Five Guys, that's just a mind state that you're under that influences your preferences in the moment. So if you don't truly understand the mind state that your shopper or your consumer is under when they make decisions for your brand, you're only getting half of the story. You understand their preferences, but if they're not acting on their preferences and you don't understand why, it's because you don't understand how context in that moment, that mind state that somebody's under, is influencing their preferences.
So how is all of this structured in the book? I think that that's one of the interesting things to chat about with so many books out there, and the organization, I think, especially with a system, a framework like this, is worth understanding how that's going to be unpacked. So how do you break this down?
Yep. So what I tried to do first off was I wanted to make a book that's applicable to anybody, because I think I'm running the book. If you're a behavioral scientist, this book is not for you. But this book is for people who don't want to earn a PhD while reading a book, right? So first off, what I did was I said, let's just get a lot of the science out of there. It's all backed upon strong years and many, many years of social science behavioral work that's done globally. But I said, let's take all that out and let's just make it applicable. So by doing so, I basically structured in three parts. The first part was just, hey, listen, understanding what we just talked about, frankly, you and I, Nick, about the non-conscious, how impactful our environments are and these mind states are to our everyday behaviors. And so I use a lot of stories about like me and the birth of my son, Nicholas, or I talk about when I was in business and I made a really big mistake in a business. So what I'm trying to do is, rather than talking to you about the academics of motivational psychology, just give examples of when Nicholas was born and how I acted as a new dad. So that just sets the stage. Next, what we do is we talk about those four factors I just talked about. High level, every chapter starts off with a personal story, and then it brings in a business story as well. So you can kind of get both aspects of, okay, yep, me as a dad or you as a mother, but also me in business, whether that's a brand manager or maybe an agency, somebody works at an agency, or maybe even, frankly, a real estate agent. But then we go into the application. So who cares if you understand somebody's goals and motivations and regulatory parts? Like, what does that mean to the common everyday person who's just trying to do a little bit better marketing, a little bit, you know, optimizing their website? So kind of what happens is, in the back part of the book, it's almost like a choose your own adventure. What will happen is it'll give you some exercises to do. And based upon your answers to the exercise, it's going to tell you to go to a portion of the book where you'll learn about this one specific mind state that your customer's under. And then what I did from there is I said, okay, I'm not going to try to give you an entire briefing on this mind state and the types of words and the actual images or the types of images you should be using and how should you frame up your brand and how should your story be interacting with their broader narrative. Like, that's just too much for a paperback book. So what I do is I send people over to a website, marketingtomindstates.com, where you can download full behavioral briefs. You can download all these different papers so you can get the full experience of, okay, if you're going to create a new experience, you know, maybe it's a pop-up store or maybe it's a website, you can download that exact behavioral brief that you kind of figured out through the book. You can have it yourself. It's for free. You don't have to buy the book. In fact, you don't have to buy the book to get to that. You can just go to marketingtomindstates.com, go to the resources tab and download all these briefs. But what the goal was to make it applicable, because I just want people 10 years from now not talking about the science of behavioral design. I'd much rather have them talking about, oh, did you realize that when we dilated the pupils of the head model on our ad, we were creating psychological reciprocity, and that's why I chose to round the eyes and make your pupils dilated using Photoshop. Like, that's more important to me than people understanding the concept of reciprocity and priming.
Well, I think that's such a great way to package and deliver scientific insights to, again, I think from your own audience perspective, that the behavioral scientists are going to want a different book. And at the same time, they're going to want all of that and more. But at the same time, actual marketers looking to the book are going to be overwhelmed there. So being able to kind of give those the snapshots, but then provide the greater detail so that it is accessible if needed, I think that that's a real smart way to go about doing that.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I did it almost by necessity, because when I first started my consulting company, so I have a consultancy that does the research as well as design consulting, and it was out of necessity because I kept finding that I was trying to teach my clients about the behavioral sciences and behavioral design because it's my passion. I love it. And what you find, and when you do that enough times, you look at clients and they're looking at you like they don't go to work to be taught anything. They just don't. They go to work to provide for their family, to work on big brands, to do something meaningful. And I started noticing that, you know, they're less excited about the educational side of it as I was. They were just saying, Will, I have to drive penetration of my brand in Walgreens. Help me do that. Just tell me what I should do. And I sort of think, my gosh, out of necessity, we have to design something that's much more applicable. And that's literally why a year and a half ago, I decided to start writing the guide in the book.
So you talked about your consultancy. The other thing that I think is interesting about your work and what you do and how you do it is that, like me, you have a foot in academia as well. And I think that that dynamic is interesting, probably at any point in the history of marketing, just working with practitioners and working with the marketers of tomorrow. But I also think that it's interesting at this moment of flux, this inflection mm-hmm. point that we find ourselves in, that you kind of led the show off with, talking about all the new tools, technology we have. Things are very different right now, and I think talking to those two audiences at this time is very unique, as the perspectives are both both divergent and complementary as well. What do you find about those two worlds that you're spending your time in?
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. If you would have asked me this question a decade ago, I would have told you they were totally different sectors. They don't talk to each other. In fact, there's almost a distrust. Like, academics looked at business people as like, oh gosh, you guys don't know what you're doing. And we'd look at academics saying, you're so high and mighty out there, and you're talking about issues that are not applicable. And I think, to your point, there's more people just like you and I, right? That we kind of step our toes in both sides. So I use academia as a way of pressure testing some of the theories that I'm kind of triangulating, looking at other things. So I use my class to push ideas and see their reactions. So that's how I step in that world. And I love the structure of academics and peer reviews and having smart people really pressure testing. And I think that's a great part of academia that we lose in business, right? In business, we just, hey, this thing worked for me one time. It's now fact, and let's go forward with it. Let's do it every single time. Let's do scarcity effect. On the other side, I just talked to a professor, University of Cincinnati, last week. And he was talking about the book, saying, I want to use the book because I don't feel like I can teach these students, undergrad students, much about business because I don't have the stories that you do. I don't know what it's like to be a brand manager or whatever. So I'm seeing academics are looking for more help and making their coursework more relatable because they don't want to be seen, or they want to prepare their students to be able to be successful in business. So 10 years ago, we weren't talking at all. Now it's I wouldn't say it's totally blurred, but I think you're right, Nick. There is a lot of commonality, more commonality than there ever used to be. And we both see the advantages of real world business versus experimental things that we do in academia.
Yeah. I would wholeheartedly agree. And I think that the difference in pace is interesting, and there's certainly pros yeah, and cons to each. So, sometimes academia can move a little too slow sometimes mm-hmm. in terms of how quick to adapt. But then on the other side, I think you raised a really good point that sometimes business can get a little too quick, a little quick to over apply some of the things that we've that we've discovered, that we've found out, and I'm not sure that's always the best practice either.
I'm with you. I think what business is good at is doing what's, meaning here's what I'm going to go do. Here's what I'm doing. Oh, this worked. This is what worked. Let's go do it. Academia is very good about understanding why something works. And so the problem with business is if something works, this what? Here, I did this what? Let me go do it again and again and again. And when it fails, like, oh, well, they'll move on to the next thing. With academia, you can understand the why behind the what. I know that's probably – I keep using a lot of W's. But no. That's why they come together. It's so powerful because now you can go, oh, I understand why it didn't work the second time, because I made this small tweak. Let's go back to something that worked in the past. tweak it because I know from academia how to tweak it. And now we can keep using kind of the same thing with a little bit of a nuance for a much longer time. So they work so well together. I just wish that there was more of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I love the what's and the whys. Definitely, definitely critical. Well, Will, as we start to wrap up here, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Oh, gosh. So with the birth of my son, I became, just like most dads, more aware of toy brands. And Lego, about 3 years ago, became like, there was a point where I'm like, I will shut down my company if Lego ever came to me and just said, we want you to become a research analyst for $30,000 a year. I would almost do it because I am so fascinated by Lego. But as my son has gotten older, Marvel right now and the work that the Marvel universe is doing, not just in the movies, but also in the comics, is amazing. And so those two brands, especially because both those brands allow me as an adult to connect with my young son in ways that I'm not the authoritative father. Like we can both read comic books and he asks me, you know, who's more powerful? Is it the Hulk versus Superman? Mm-hmm. I can have an informed opinion on that kind of stuff. So I think those two brands have created, at least for my family and for me, a way of relating to my son in a way that otherwise wouldn't be available to me if I didn't have those two specific brands.
Those are great examples. And as a parent, I can wholeheartedly endorse those. Well, Will, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yep. So if you go to marketingtomindstates.com, you can learn more about the book. You can learn about me as the author. There'll be a tab there to learn more about the consultancy. But what I would encourage anybody to do is go to the resources page. You don't have to buy the book. If you want to just kind of look at the resources, I think you can download a free chapter. But that'll give you a lot more understanding of the book itself, the free chapter, the resources. And if you, like I think you said, Nick, if you want to get into the science, I think I have a reading list that tells you, hey, if you want to read it, get really deep in the science, here are the papers you should be reading, here are the books or whatever. So it's kind of like a place, one-stop shop for all things behavioral design, as simple as understanding how to use a trigger all the way to deep understanding of psychology. So marketingtomindstates.com is the place to go.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Will, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Hey, thank you, Nick. Really appreciate the time.
And a reminder, if you heard something on this episode or another, if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. On Brand is a production of Brand Driven Digital, helping complex organizations simplify their branding and marketing to unlock growth. More, including the links discussed on this episode, at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.